Welcome to Seven Steps to Awakening. I'm excited. We're in step four, and tonight we start the Nisargadatta Maharaj quotes. I always love the Nisargadatta Maharaj quotes. He's turned out to be one of my favorites. But before I go into the quotes tonight, what I'll do is play a song. This is a song that Michael Langford sent to me a while ago. I don't remember now how long ago, but it's been, you know, several months, if not a year or more. It's a great song. It's called Be the One. And later I will talk about why I picked this song tonight. In fact, I'll actually be talking about it during the member meeting, so you'll have to hang around in the member meeting to hear the story. But this is the song that will get us started this evening, Be the One.
Gonna be the one you never quite allowed yourself to be. Be the one you want to be. When you're gonna learn the lessons that life is always giving. When you're gonna cross the threshold that makes life worth the living. When you're gonna love somebody the way you always wanted to. When you're gonna find the love that's all inside of you. And be the one you want to be. Be the one you want to be. Spirit and let your love start flowing. When you're gonna let your light shine through all your fears and sorrows. When you're gonna claim your birthright and be the one you want to be. Be the one you want to be. The way you always wanted to. When you're gonna find the love, it's all inside of you and me. Be the one you want to. Be the one you want to.
Love that song. So I will tell you just a little bit of the story, but then the rest of it I will save for the member meeting. What I have done, I actually did it today, is I have rearranged my calendar so that now I can meditate for 2 hours a day. I wasn't meditating for 2 hours a day before. I have certainly meditated for 2 hours, but that was rare rather than regular. And it suddenly occurred to me today, I guess you realize things when you're ready to realize them, is that there are two reasons. And one really kind of started occurring to me last Sunday night, so it has to do with the seven steps. Let me begin last week with the seven steps. Let's just start there. Last week, when I was sharing from the seven steps, I was sharing from an experience I had in September of 2015 where it felt like something else took over the body and was moving the body. And you may remember I told you it went out into the driveway and got down on the hands and knees and was looking at an ant or something. And the mind was really doing its best just to surrender, and let this thing take over and not be in control. And I remember watching the mind and just thinking, oh, it's trying so hard. But, you know, it wasn't able to completely let go. And I think I shared with you a couple of the thoughts that came in that really kept the mind from letting go. And really the general idea was, that the mind is needed in order to be practical. But the specific thoughts that came in, one was, would I be able to work out? And the other one was, would I be able to do my job if I let go of the mind? Would I be able to work out and would I be able to do my job? And one of the things that's happened was, you know, I've had time in my calendar scheduled for workout and shower each day. And those of you who have been to my house, you know I have a lovely gym here. I have like a full-size gym in my house. It includes a little area for aerobic dance. It includes a weight bench and lots of weights. It includes a stair climber. It includes a treadmill. And it includes a weight machine that even has a leg press on it. You know, it's really a very nice gym. And I think in around September of 2015 is when the gym just started to be built. So probably at that time, the weight machine with the leg press had arrived. The gym was just starting. And so here, you know, Ram was really gifting me with this wonderful gym. And I knew that this gym was coming, and, you know, and that's part of why that thought was there. You know, if I let go of the mind, will I be able to work out? I mean, here I am getting this brand new gym. But it kind of occurred to me after sharing that with you all, what a silly reason, to hold me back from attempting to reach Manonessa, right? What a silly reason. And I think it felt silly when I typed it in my journal. I think I was even a little embarrassed when I originally typed it in my journal that was my thought in September 2015. And I wasn't embarrassed anymore when I shared it with you last Sunday, but I just still heard how silly it was. Also, you know, I don't think getting exercise is silly. I want to say that. I do think that the body needs to move, and in our lives nowadays, some of us, our lives are very, you know, what's the word, sedentary, right? I sit and work on the computer all day. And I know that my own body would stiffen up quickly if it wasn't worked out. But I walk Jamie every day, and she's back up now to 3 miles a day, which means I walk 3 miles a day. And I don't think I need to walk 3 miles a day and work out, too. It's more than is necessary for the body, which means it's unnecessary. It's a form of entertainment. So one thing I have done is I've reworked my schedule to take out the workout. I still have the walk Jamie. That's a necessary activity. If you don't believe me, just ask Jamie. But I have taken out the workout. The other thing that I just realized today that was in the way of me meditating for 2 hours a day was that I do the tip first. I write the gentle healing tip first. And it occurred to me that I should reverse that. Instead of writing the gentle healing tip and then going to meditation with whatever time is left over, I should meditate first. And in fact, that will probably give really good inspiration for the tip, and I'll probably even be more effective with the tip. So I've reversed that in my calendar. So I get out of bed every morning at 5. That's not new. That's been going on for a long time. And of course, the first half hour is waking up, feeding Jamie, getting coffee. So my schedule actually starts at 5:30 in the morning. But what I've done now is I've created a calendar that allows me from 5:30 to 6 to do inspirational reading while I'm sipping my coffee. 6 to 8 is meditation. 8 to 9 is breakfast, shower, and dress. And then 9 to 10:30 is write the tip. So by 10:30 in the morning, I will have accomplished a lot of really important things. And I'm really excited. That starts tomorrow. And I know that I can meditate for 2 hours. There was a time when I really couldn't yet, but I can now. I know I can because I do sometimes. And so I've just rearranged my calendar so that that is the rule rather than the exception. Now, it doesn't mean there won't sometimes be exceptions to the rule. For example, I think it's next Thursday I have a annual mammogram appointment, and there will only be time to meditate for 1 hour that day because I have to get a shower and go to the hospital. But yeah, 2 hours a day will be the new general rule. And I'm really excited about that, really happy about that. And there's more to the story about why I decided to go to 2 hours now, but I will share the rest of that in the member meeting tonight. So, and one other thing I want to share. I told you all that during the 7 steps, I would keep you informed of my seclusion days. And this weekend, I get to have 3 seclusion days. One reason I get to have 3 days is usually my boyfriend is here on weekends. And so, you know, one of my necessary activities is spending time with him. But this weekend, he's going to be out of town. So I will be in seclusion on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And of course, Sunday we have the weekly gathering in the morning, and I, you know, teach in the evening, so it's not a good day for seclusion. But I will be in seclusion from the time I get up to the time I go to bed this Thursday, this Friday, and this Saturday. What that does mean is that my out-of-office email will be on, just like I'm out of the country or something, and my cell phone will be turned off and my house phone will be unplugged, and no one will be able to reach me, and I will be spending time in meditation and contemplation and possibly reading and listening to inspirational music. And then after that, the next scheduled seclusion isn't until January, because Jasmine will be coming home next week, and she'll be home for a full month. So the seclusion won't begin the every other week routine until mid-January. But I'm glad I get 3 days before the entire month will go by without a day of seclusion. All right, so again, we're at step 4. Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, quote number 794. And I'll give you a link to the journal for anyone who likes to go into the journal with me. There you are. All right, so this is quote 794 from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Earnestness is the only condition of success. That's perfect. Earnestness is the only condition of success. And I would say that this is what I have realized in a deeper way. Obviously, to some degree, I always knew it. I'm gonna go ahead and say, at the intellectual level, I knew it. And what's happened this weekend is that it has shifted to the heart. Earnestness is the only condition of success. And so this, of course, is why I have rearranged my calendar. in order to include the minimum of 2 hours a day. And in my particular case, I think it's fair to say right now, you know, things will change as I go forward, but right now 2 hours a day is really the maximum I can give. Once I hit the ground running, I'm going to be working till, you know, 8:30, 9 at night every night. So you know, really 2 hours is what I can do right now, and that's what I'm giving, plus those days of seclusion. So I really feel like I have become much more efficient in the way that I use my time. There is, I would say, no waste of time now. And I'm using all of the time that I can for spiritual practice. Or, you know, some of it is like reading, you know, or listening to music, but that is to increase the desire for liberation, which is an important part of the spiritual practice. I'm not yet to the point where I could sit and meditate from 5:30 in the morning till 9 at night. But I can fill all of that time with things that are pointing in that direction, right? Earnestness. One word that comes to my mind, I think it's a synonym for earnestness, but we'll go ahead and look earnestness up to be sure, is sincerity. And I think I wrote in a tip, you know, in the last month or so, that sincerity is not just a feeling. All right, you can sometimes get that feeling about how sincere you are. You guys know what I'm talking about, that feeling that you have. But sincerity isn't just a feeling. When you're really sincere about something, you live from there. Right? It's a part of your action. It's a part of your thinking. It's a part of your speaking. It's a part of your being. It's not just a feeling. And I love the word earnestness because I think earnestness captures that, you know, where some people could mistake the word sincerity for just that feeling sincere. I think earnestness captures that there's an intention and an activity that goes along with the feeling of sincerity. Right, that really turns it into something, something active. But let's go ahead and look up earnestness. Let's do that. Oh, I'm sitting here waiting for my dictionary to read my mind. I think I have to type the word right. Okay, so this dictionary has earnest, resulting from or showing sincere and intense conviction. There we go. Intense conviction. I bet if we look up the definition of sincere, those two words won't be a part of it. We'll go check that in a moment. But I think this is where earnestness kind of has that leg up. It's sincerity plus, right? Sincerity plus. Sincerity plus intense conviction. I think that's pretty important. Let's just go ahead and look up sincerity while we're here. Sincere is, oh, this is important too, free from pretense or deceit, proceeding from genuine feelings. So we have the intense conviction from the earnestness, but from the sincerity, which is a part of the definition of earnest, right? It's included in earnest, free from pretense or deceit. So we're not fooling ourselves or, of course, anyone else, but we're not fooling ourselves. We're not, you know, pretending to be applying ourselves towards a goal. We are actually applying ourselves towards that goal. So free from pretense or deceit and also proceeding from genuine feelings, not just a mental idea, but, you know, something more genuine. It comes from the heart. Maybe even comes from every cell within the body. So earnestness, which includes sincerity then, would be free from pretense or deceit, proceeding from genuine feelings, and having intense conviction. There we go. That's earnestness. And so listen again to the quote. Earnestness is the only condition of success. That's it. That sincerity, free from pretense or deceit, coming from genuine feelings, and intense conviction is the only condition of success. Yeah, and Kathy has put in a quote from The Importance of Practice and Effort, which is another one of Michael Langford's books. Earnestness is the only condition of success. Action is a proof of earnestness. Yeah, action is a proof of earnestness. There we go. So everything that I've done to rearrange my calendar so that I have that 2 hours a day for meditation, it only counts as earnestness if I actually do it. Taking the time today to rearrange my calendar by itself does not count. And here's another quote that Kathy has put in. Your earnestness will determine your progress. Your earnestness will determine your rate of progress. Thank you, Kathy. Your earnestness will determine your rate of progress. So let's look and see what I typed in the journal when I contemplated this quote previously. So this is number 794A. This is from September 28, 2015. Who decides if I will be earnest in active practice of true desire? Again, who decides if I will be earnest in active practice of true desire? Does my boss decide? Does my boyfriend decide? Does my spiritual teacher decide for me? No. Only I can decide if I will be earnest moment to moment, or if I will allow myself to be forgetful and distracted. As A Course in Miracles says, the power of decision is my own. And that's from Course in Miracles Workbook Lesson 152. So, yeah, Jay has added that my calendar changes. He says will determine my progress. Oh, will not determine my progress. Yeah, my calendar changes will not determine my progress. Yes. So this is interesting because, I wrote this in September 28, 2015, and assuming I follow my calendar, which I probably will. I've been pretty good. I've been following my calendar now since June. In June, I began scheduling my entire life, and there's a story behind why, but I won't tell that story now. It's not important. But I began scheduling my entire life in the calendar in June, and then each day I just go where my calendar tells me to go. And I've been very good at doing that. So because I've already got, nearly 6 months, maybe 6 months exactly, under my belt of obeying my calendar, I feel pretty confident that actually when I get up in the morning and the calendar now has new instructions, that I will still follow the calendar. But we'll find out, and I'll report to you next week how it's going. But I would say that today, since I sat down and rearranged my calendar today, and of course it was a few weeks ago, right, when I decided to also add those days of seclusion into my calendar. So in the last few weeks then, since I've been making these changes, I am just now getting over the hang-ups that this journal entry points out, that this contemplation points out. Because I didn't write these questions, does my boss decide, does my boyfriend decide, does my spiritual teacher decide for me? Those weren't just random things that I wrote. Those were my hang-ups. So let's look at each of these hang-ups one by one. The first hang-up, does my boss decide? Again, the question is, who decides if I will be earnest in active practice of true desire? And the first question was, does my boss decide? So the hang-up there, which is a very funny hang-up, the hang-up was that if I gave my entire morning to contemplation and meditation, that somehow my boss, that would be Phil Frisk, my boss would think I was not working hard enough. That was the thought. I had to prove that I'm working really, really hard, you know, from early in the morning till late in the evening. And I would say a part of overcoming that hang-up has to do with a comment that I made a while ago. I made a comment that I have become much more efficient. And that's true. I know that from my own observation, that the way I use my time now is much more efficient. There is no more wasted time. I'm certain that in September of 2015, there was still wasted time. I was probably spending a certain amount of time each day on Facebook, a certain amount of time each day watching television. Maybe I was wasting time in other ways. I don't know, but I would guess those are my two primary ways. Of course, I was working out in my gym. And so because I was using, you know, at least 3 hours of my day in wasted ways, I didn't feel like I had any more time to take away from work in order to meditate. Right? So what has happened, is that I have become much more efficient. And I will be absolutely honest with you, putting things in my calendar the way I do has been a big part of how I have become much more efficient. But I've become much more efficient where there really isn't wasted time anymore. As a result of there not being that wasted time, I feel very comfortable beginning the day with 2.5 hours of personal spiritual practice. And then taking seclusion days, 2 days every other week, 4 days a month. Because now there's no wasted time, and my time is being used so efficiently that I'm really not taking away from the work that I am to do. Now, one thing I want to comment on, and this is just to help anyone else relieve any guilt that you may feel. This journal entry is in September of 2015. We now sit here in December of 2017, and I really feel like now I'm there. I'm there. I'm where I wanted to be the day I wrote the journal entry, but now I'm there. And I've noticed this pattern, at least for me, throughout my entire spiritual path, in that I will often have an intention, a year, a couple of years, I think often a couple of years before that intention comes into fruition. So, for example, I want to let go of judgment, and about 2 years later, I'm noticing the judging mind is not as strong. I want to let go of even gossip, and about two years later, I'm noticing I'm really not participating in gossip like I was. You know, I remember Peace Pilgrim said that the believing often preceded the living. And I think what she meant by that was the believing, yes, I have to let go of judgment. Yes, I have to let go of gossip. Yes, I have to begin meditating, or yes, I need to lengthen how much I meditate, right? That believing, that knowing it needs to be done can occur, but then there can be some lag before it actually becomes a part of the living. And of course, if you're the kind of person that can just make a decision today and do it, that's great. You know, you don't need that 2 year lag or 1 year lag or 6 month lag. But if you do see that lag, just don't beat yourself up. Hold the intention and keep moving in that direction. Because I have found that I do tend to get to what I wanted to get to, just not always as quickly as I wanted to. So in September 2015, I was noticing, you know, that I had obstacles to using my time in the way I wanted to. One of the obstacles, of course, you notice the projection here. One of the obstacles was the thought that my boss would think I wasn't working enough, when in reality, that's the reality of it, right? So what needed to happen was the wasted time needed to be removed, which took time. But now that wasted time is removed. Now there's great efficiency in the way I spend my day, and I am ready, right? So that was the first obstacle. Let's look at the second obstacle. Does my boyfriend decide? That, of course, was the thought that I need to spend a certain amount of time with Ron. And, you know, like when he's here, I shouldn't be in spiritual practice. You know, like I should be with him. That thought was kind of there, that like I was allowed to have my time for spiritual practice when Ron wasn't here. And he's not here usually at least 4 days a week and sometimes 5 days a week. But that when he is here, that really I needed to be having attention towards him and not spiritual practice. That has also changed. In fact, he even knows about these days of seclusion. And he knows that even if he's here in the house, if it's a scheduled day of seclusion, that I will be downstairs in seclusion and he's supposed to pretend like I'm in La Vida. That's what I told him. And he's willing for that. You know, isn't that funny? He's willing for that. All I had to do was let him know this is what I was going to do, and he's willing. So in whose head was the idea that if he was here, I couldn't be in spiritual practice? That was in my head, wasn't it? You know, he's accepting the seclusion. Of course, in the morning when I do the meditation, I just come down to my office and I meditate. I tell him I'm going down to meditate, and that's that. He's never once said why. Now, I do understand also that there are times, again, when there is some truth to the fact that I need to give the attention to him. For example, when we're on family vacation and we're sharing a motel, usually it's him, me, and Jasmine, I'm not going to ask them to sit there and be quiet for 2 hours while I meditate. You know, during those weeks, I probably, to be honest, won't meditate and we'll have our family vacation. But that's only 1 or 2 weeks out of the year. Right? There may occasionally be days when he wants to get up and leave the house early to go to a special event, and I may have to reduce my meditation to an hour. But that, again, is occasionally. The rule is, you know, that I have plenty of time, especially since I get up at 5 in the morning, usually on weekends too. I have plenty of time. And there's nobody in my family that's standing in my way. That was just my imagination. And again, now I have obviously transcended that obstacle because of the things that I am now doing. Now, the third one, does my spiritual teacher decide for me? That has a slightly different flavor in the question. The spiritual teacher here being Michael Langford. And I never saw Michael Langford as an obstacle, like I saw the boss or the boyfriend as an obstacle. What I really meant in this question was, Michael can't do it for me. I have to do it for myself. Right? If Michael could do it for me, piece of cake, you know, I would only be interested in the direct path teachings and the direct path meditation, right? But he can't do this for me. He can't decide for me. I have to make the decision. So that's what that last question means. You know, he can't decide for me. I have to do it. Oh, yeah, and Kathy is pointing out that I can still do the loving all method no matter who's there or what's happening. And I will say that the loving all method is a piece of cake for me now. That for me is a natural way of being, and I mean that in all sincerity. I don't have a problem with the loving all method. And so that is always happening, the loving all method. Yeah. I love the loving all method. And once it becomes natural, what you experience is just joy. Because where there is love, there is joy. Right? But it is a practice until it's natural. But practicing it as well as you can, at some point it becomes natural. Okay, so back now that I've explained those obstacles to you, let's read 794A again. Who decides if I will be earnest in active practice of true desire? Does my boss decide? Does my boyfriend decide? Does my spiritual teacher decide for me? No. Only I can decide if I will be earnest moment to moment, or if I will allow myself to be forgetful and distracted. A Course in Miracles says, the power of decision is my own. All right, so I'm going to move on to 794B, and before I read that, I'm going to read the quote again. Quote number 794, earnestness is the only condition of success. Earnestness, right? Earnestness is the only condition of success. So let's look at the next journal entry. Is the perfection of meditation required in order to awaken by grace to one's true self? I am told earnestness is the only condition of success. If one judges one's meditation or one's contemplation skills, one is seen with and strengthening the idea that mind knows. Again, mind is being seen as the sensible and wise one who knows. However, it is mind's job to become less and less now. Do not judge spiritual progress or skill. Let mind not know what meditation or contemplation is supposed to look like. Instead of judging, simply remain earnest. Regardless of any imagined spiritual skill set or lack thereof, this is something you can do. You can be earnest because your heart calls for only one focus now. I think it was during the NTI discussion on Wednesday night that I mentioned, you know, that I'm aware that in some ways on this spiritual path, I've been a little bit speedy. I've caught on quickly. You know, I caught on pretty quickly to forgiveness, for example. And I caught on pretty quickly to listening to inner spiritual intuition, even scribing with inner spiritual intuition. I caught on pretty quickly to contemplation and being able to effectively contemplate. Meditation's the exception to the rule. It's like I got to be, at the head of the class in some ways, you know, with forgiveness and contemplation and listening to the inner voice. But I'm way back at the back of the class when it comes to meditation. And so it's important that I don't let that become the next obstacle. It's important that my experience with meditation, that I'm not just, you know, catching on so quickly as I did to everything else. It's important that I don't let that cause me to drop it, cause me to quit. I put a quote the other day, not a quote actually, I put a thought in the sharing and contemplation group the other day that said something like, failure is not a reason to quit trying, it's a reason to continue to try. And that was me talking to myself. I put it in sharing and contemplation because I felt to, and a number of other people seemed to appreciate it as well, so that was, you know, good to follow up. But I wasn't talking to you. That was me talking to myself about meditation. And in fact, in some ways, I feel like I've slipped backwards. And again, this is the mind's judgment, and they don't mean a thing. But there was a certain amount of silence and ease that had come into my meditation. And lately, it's like I've slipped backwards. Now the mind is much louder again. I haven't slipped all the way backwards, in that if you guys will remember, where I started off was falling asleep, and I have not gone back to falling asleep. I am able to sit for even 2 hours, you know, without falling asleep. Nancy says she thought I was talking to her about the failure statement. Yeah, no, talking to me. That's funny. Oh, I know why you thought. It just hit me why you thought I was talking to you. I just figured that one out. Because the night before, I got it. Because the night before you made a comment that you wanted to come home and not look at the phone and not look at Facebook or whatever, and you did anyway. So, yeah, you see the timing. But, no, it had nothing to do with you. That's funny, though. I was talking to me. You weren't even on my mind. oh, shoot. Now I forgot what I was saying. That's funny, though. Oh, yes. So I haven't slipped all the way back into that. I fall asleep. I don't fall asleep. But the mind has become louder again. And I don't know exactly why. I can let the mind make up reasons as to why it's louder. But I'm not going to do that. What I do is I remember. Not that. You know, I'm waking up tomorrow. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll hit Mananasa tomorrow, but that's not my expectation. But I remember that Michael Langford once wrote in an email that, you know, people have different experiences just prior to Mananasa. For some people, the mind does get quiet and still. But for other people, the mind gets very, very loud. So what that is saying to me is the fact that my mind is getting loud again, that it's chattering more during meditation, there's really no conclusion I can make about that. And in fact, if I was to let the ego make the conclusion the ego would make is, here I've been meditating for 2.5 years, I still suck at it, I'm never going to get good at it, I might as well quit. Right? That's the conclusion that the ego would make, which is what led to, Nancy, the comment that, you know, failure is not a reason to quit trying. It's a reason to continue to try. but I love the fact, you know, I love what this quote says, and I love what the journal entry says, you know, that if earnestness is the only condition of success, well, then I only need to continue to be earnest, continue to try. That's it. That's my job. And again, as this journal entry says, the mind cannot judge. The mind cannot determine whether progress is being made. You know, there's another quote in The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss that says that progress may be imperceptible to the practitioner. Progress may be imperceptible to the practitioner. And just as I said that the first time, I realized, you know, in my case, progress isn't imperceptible. I do have two clear signs of progress. One is I used to fall asleep within 10 minutes. Now I can meditate for 2 hours without falling asleep, right? There's a progress. Do you agree? And then the second thing is, I have changed the way I use my time. I have taken the wasted time out of my schedule. I have become much more efficient with my time. And tomorrow, again, I'll report to you next week, honestly, but tomorrow I think I'm beginning to meditate 2 hours a day, finally, but I'm there. That's also progress. Rearranging my schedule in order to meditate 2 hours a day and to take those important days of total seclusion, that's a sign of progress. So, you know, the mind wants to look at the chatter that's been happening lately and, you know, and say, that's it, throw in the hat, give up, quit, you'll never be able to do this. But then, you know, you can expect the mind to have that point of view, right? So let's look at the journal entry again. 794B. is the perfection of meditation required in order to awaken by grace to one's true self. I am told earnestness is the only condition of success. If one judges one's meditation or one's contemplation skills, one is seeing with and strengthening the idea that mind knows. Again, mind is being seen as the sensible and wise one who knows. However, it is mind's job to become less and less now. Do not judge spiritual progress or skill. Let mind not know what meditation or contemplation is supposed to look like. Instead of judging, simply remain earnest. Regardless of any imagined spiritual skill set or lack thereof, this is something you can do. You can be earnest because your heart calls for only one focus now. And I'm going to read the quote one more time and then we will look at 794C. The quote from Nisargadatta Maharaj: earnestness is the only condition of success. All right, so here's 794C. Committing to earnestness without judging one's spiritual progress or skill set is to remain humbly in the heart of true desire. Grace can find you there. Be humble in earnestness and trust. So to me, this is kind of a sweet, encouraging journal entry. Now, of course, you know, I use the word grace, and Michael does not. But for me, grace means that it's something that I, being the ego I, can't make happen. I don't see grace as being pure luck without some participation on my part. In fact, I feel that grace responds to me. So as I, you know, it's kind of like the prodigal son, right? As I move in a certain direction, then grace comes to greet me. But I have to be moving in that direction, right? And again, I can't make awakening happen. You know, the I again being the ego me. It somehow happens, but I do have to make the trip home. I have to make the trip home. So with that in mind, listen to this journal entry again. Committing to earnestness without judging one's spiritual progress or skill set is to remain humbly in the heart of true desire. Committing to earnestness without judging one's spiritual progress or skill set is to remain humbly in the heart of true desire. Grace can find you there. Right? If I'm being earnest, doing my absolute best, and staying humbly in the heart of true desire, grace can find me there. I'm waiting in a place where I can be found. Therefore, the last line of this journal entry says, be humble in earnestness and trust. So like I said, that's sweet and encouraging, that particular journal entry. And that takes me to quote number 795. So 795 says, all will happen as you want it, provided you really want it. All will happen as you want it, provided you really want it. And again, when you really want something, I've talked about this recently in Seven Steps, when you really want something, you take action to get it, right? If you want something to eat, you get up and go in the kitchen and get something to eat. You know, nowadays, if you want to find a mate, you join a dating site and find a mate, right? If you want something, you take steps to move in that direction. So again, wanting is like sincerity. It isn't just a feeling in the heart. When you really want something, you take steps to get it. And so this says, all will happen as you want it, provided you really want it. And that means you're taking those steps. You're using your time in the pursuit of that goal. And of course, the it here we're talking about is liberation or Manonasa, right? All will happen as you want it. I love that. It will, is what this says. It will. All will happen as you want it, provided you really want it. You aren't just talking about it, thinking about it, right? So let's look at the journal entry, 795A. Okay, listen to this. I can trust this world because it is an illusion. The world is not real like it appears to be. The world is a temporary and changing appearance brought about through the power of desire. This is why I can trust the world. As I fine-tune my desire, ensuring that the power of desire is behind only the purpose to awaken, the world and the mysterious force that is behind it responds by answering the call of my one true desire. I know this to be true. And I even remember what was in my mind as I was writing this that day. It was back to that thought that I couldn't take 2 hours a day to meditate because that'd be kind of like cheating my workload, right? And again, I guess I wasn't ready to see that I could just take the waste of time out of the schedule. I felt like I had too much work to do, and it was my responsibility to do that work, and I had too much work to do to meditate 2 hours a day. And so what this journal entry is saying is, you know what, I can trust the world because it's going to respond to me. It's not real. It's an illusion. It's going to respond to me. So if I continue to say I am too busy, it's going to continue to make sure I am too busy. So I need to have that faith and trust that if I just start expanding my meditation time or my meditation and contemplation time, that because really what the universe wants from me is awakening, once I start taking those actions, the universe will make sure I have the space to take those actions. In other words, if I don't take the action of expanding my meditation time because I am too busy, I will continue to be too busy. If I expand my meditation time in spite of the fact that I appear too busy, the universe will make sure I have time. And I said, I know this is true. It kind of reminds me of a story that Gloria told you all in a weekly gathering. I think it was probably last month, but it could have been the month before. It's a story from our MPP Kabbalah class about a man. What was his name, Kathy? Do you remember we were talking? His name was Neck neck something. Do you remember? He walked out into the Red Sea up to his neck. What was his name? I wonder if you can remember that. Neck something. But in the story, Moses, of course, raises his staff and said he's going to, ask God to split the Red Sea so that the Israelites could cross and escape the Egyptians who were chasing them. But the sea did not immediately split. And this guy, Nechshon or something, I don't remember his name, but anyway, he had enough faith that since Moses asked that God would split the Red Sea, that even though it hadn't split, he starts walking into it anyway. He walks up to his waist and it's not split. He walks up to his chest and has not that split, up to his neck. He keeps right on walking until it looks like the water is going to cover his mouth and his nose and he's going to drown. And when he walks all the way out that far in faith that God will split the Red Sea splits. So that's kind of the idea here, that if I keep saying I'm too busy to meditate, I'm going to keep being too busy to meditate. But if I start walking in the direction of there's time, I'm going to start taking the time because there's going to be time. God's going to make sure I have time because this is important to God too, right? That same attitude that this guy had walking into the Red Sea, that the calendar will open up, just like the Red Sea opened up, and there will be time. So it's a matter of walking in that direction first, rather than setting back and waiting for the calendar to open up. And to some degree, I did start doing that. I started, making sure I was meditating at least half an hour a day, regardless of how busy I felt, right? That's where it started in 2015. And now here we are, up to 2017, up to 2 hours. And the seclusion days, 4 seclusion days a month, right? All right, so let me read this journal entry again. There are more on this particular quote, but we'll get to those next week. So this journal entry, 795A, says, "I can trust this world because it is an illusion. The world is not real like it appears to be. The world is a temporary and changing appearance brought about through the power of desire. This is why I can trust the world. As I fine-tune my desire, ensuring that the power of desire is behind only the purpose to awaken, the world and the mysterious force that is behind it responds by answering the call of my one true desire. I know this to be true." So, what we have next is a member meeting, and I will be leading the member meeting, but what I need is about 1 minute to save this recording. So I'm going to let go of the mic. Hopefully Ken can take the mic, and I'll put my hand up when my recording has been saved and I am ready to come back for the member meeting. If Ken can't take the mic, there may just be about 60 seconds of silence until I come back. All right? So I am releasing the mic.